charts crazy stupid with a smoking hot guy.
Martha, I snapped.
Am I wrong, or did his truck not start last night and he hitched a ride home? She asked.
My eyes went to the microwave, then they went to the kitchen counter.
I cannot believe you. You are the one who's crazy. First, you don't leave for work for an hour, and second, my house is 30 minutes out of your way to get to work.
I am committed to the mission of stopping you from making another very bad mistake, she returned.
I heard the fridge close, but I didn't need to hear it to be very aware that Brock was in the room, and he could hear every word.
I can't talk about this now, I told her.
Come by the bakery tonight after work. We'll have a cupcake and a chat.
Girl, I'm single, and my best friend just dropped 10 pounds and got a $300 hairstyle.
There is no way I'm eating one of your cupcakes, because eating one means eating four.
And I don't need those cupcakes on my fat ass when I'm out on the prowl with you. No one looked at me before, what with you and your bodacious tatas and the look on your face that says to all comers,
isn't it sweet? The whole world is like Disneyland.
I eat your cupcakes, which never fail to settle on my ass. I'll become invisible.
That isn't true, I told her.
Which part? She shot back.
All of it, I answered instantly.
Girl, wake up.
I sighed. My eyes moved to Brock to see him, hips against the counter, open jug of milk in his hand, and I was pretty certain I missed him drinking straight from it. A drawback. He grinned at me, and I felt the sweet hum in the air, saw his eyes dancing, and knew he was grinning in order not to burst out laughing. Okay, cancel drawback. He could drink straight from the milk jug all he wanted, as long as he filled my kitchen with that great vibe and grinned at me while looking all morning hot guy. Hello? Martha snapped in my ear, and I jerked my eyes away from Brock. I'm here, I told her.
Oh my God, he's right there muddling your head, she muttered.
She wasn't wrong about that. Time to get serious. Martha, really, honey, we need to talk.
Shit, she was still muttering.
It's important, I whispered, and felt the amused Brock vibe flatten, but the kitchen filled with warmth. Martha heard my tone, read it, and immediately gave in.
All right, but we're not meeting at the bakery for cupcakes. You're coming over and I'm making salad.
I blinked at the counter.
You're making salad? I'm making salad.
Honey, the last time I had dinner at your house, you fried celery. The warmth in the room remained, but the hum came back, and it was heralded in by Brock roaring with laughter. My eyes cut to him, and I bugged them out, but he ignored my hint, kept laughing, and did it shaking his head.
I hear he found that amusing, Martha noted irritably.
I looked away from Brock and pointed out, Martha, babe, you fried celery. Anyone would find that amusing.
I'm an experimental chef, she fired back.
This was true, but she was not an altogether successful one. I sighed again. Then I suggested, how about you come over here and I'll make salads?
Will Smokin' Hot Guy be there?
His name is Brock, I whispered.
Will Smokin' Hot but Bad for You Brock be there? She amended.
I don't know, I told her the truth. But what I have to say won't wait, and he knows about it anyway, so if he is, you'll deal. If he isn't, he isn't. Yeah? Silence. Then,
so this isn't about him?
No, it isn't. It's about something I should have told you a while ago, but I didn't. And I need to. My eyes slid to Brock, and saw his were on me as I saw he was moving toward me. Then he made it to me. His arm wrapped around my belly. The front of his body hit the back of mine. I felt his heat. Then I felt his face in my neck. Only then did I continue. I need to get rid of it, so it's time to tell you about it. Straight off the bat, she whispered her guess. Damien. That's when I knew she knew. Or she might not actually know, but she sensed there were deeper issues at play, but she backed off and let me deal with them. And when I stuck to my guns and got shot of my ex-husband without sinking into the depths of despair, she gave me that play. Yes, I whispered back. Brock's arm gave me a squeeze. I closed my eyes.
All right, babe, I'll be there at 7.
Martha, I called.
Yeah, Tess, she answered.
Love you, honey.
Love you too, babe.
but you keep stalking me, that love will die, I warned on a tease.
Whatever, she muttered, knowing it was a tease, then disconnected.
I hit the screen to end call and dropped my phone on the counter. When I did this, Brock turned me so we were face to face, and both his arms were around me.
Not my biggest fan, he muttered, but he didn't appear the least broken up about it.
You want to hang with me? You might want to put some work into that, I suggested.
Right, he replied, then said, No, babe, I'll tell you now, she don't like me, and I don't give a fuck.
Another drawback. She's my best friend, I reminded him.
If she is, she'll come to see what's good for you, and she'll sort her shit out. If she's a different kind of woman, she won't. Instead, she'll see green, and won't clue in that men do not want high-maintenance drama queens so much they steer well clear. And until she shifts that shit out of her life, it's gonna be a lonely one. Unlike her friend, who sees a man drinking out of her milk jug, processes that it's highly unlikely she's gonna break him of that habit, seeing as he's 45, and still does it, and has since he was a kid. Lets it go, and moves on all in the expanse of about a second, instead of throwing a shit fit about it, which gets her nowhere, is a waste of energy, and leaves both involved feeling like garbage.
Well, I had to admit, all that was interesting, and insightful, and weirdly mature. Still, well, now that we're on that subject, it's somewhat unhygienic for you to drink out of the milk jug.
Babe, I had my tongue in your mouth for 10 minutes this morning. How's it any different?
I tipped my head to the side while considering this point. Then I shared, Your point holds merit. He burst out laughing, and in the middle of it, buried his face in my neck, so when he was done, he could kiss me there. This was nice as in way nice. He used to do that all the time, too, and I'd missed it. His head came up and his eyes captured mine.
Y'all right with me jumping in the shower before I head out?
Brock, naked in my shower and all the delightful visions that would generate that I could pull out and turn over in my head any time I wanted?
Yeah.
Sure, I said. His mouth hitched up on one side, and I liked that, too. Then his semi-smile faded, his arms squeezed, and he asked, You want me here for a salad?
Do you want to be here for a salad?
I asked back.
What I want is for you to tell me what you want, he replied.
I thought about this. Then I said hesitantly, Maybe not.
Right, he muttered.
It's not that I hastened to add, but he cut me off with another arm squeeze and dipped his face close.
Baby, it's cool. I'll show tonight around the same time as I showed last night.
Good? I nodded.
Tomorrow, no plans with your girls. Tomorrow night is mine, he declared.
My belly got warm and gushy, and I nodded again. He grinned and muttered again.
Right.
He dropped his head more, touched his mouth to mine briefly, and murmured, Shower, against my lips. A thrill slid up my spine. Brock let me go and sauntered out of the room. I stared at the coffee maker and smiled when I heard the shower go on in the bathroom. Then I made coffee. An hour and a half later, I was sitting in my car staring at the side of my bakery, my phone in my hand, deliberating. I had never played games with Brock. Never. Not from the very beginning. I took one look at him, liked what I saw a whole lot, and the minute he showed interest, I showed it back, and never veered from that path. I did this because since I saw it, and all the times I saw it since, the scene in my big fat Greek wedding when Ian asked Tula out and she immediately answered yes, no games, no subterfuge, exposing straight out she was not only interested, but the idea of spending time with him excited her. I thought that was the sweetest thing I ever saw. And I also did this because I was me. So I was sitting in my car with my phone in my hand, thinking that what Brock said was right. What he and I had been fucked. And for 3 months, it fucked with my head. But 7 months ago, when he brought me home after our first date and kissed me in his pickup, and that kiss lasted half an hour, this is no joke. And he finally tore his mouth from mine, shoved his face in my neck, and growled, fuck, against my skin with his strong arms tight around me.
I knew what we had was real. I also knew that it had started good, and it was only going to get better. Like Tula and Ian knew in my big fat Greek wedding. That had been what Brock was talking about in my kitchen yesterday. That was what he meant when he said I knew the exact second I stopped being someone he was investigating and started being someone who might grow to mean something to him. And I did know, and that was the exact second I knew. And last night he proved that what I felt in that second was no lie. And playing games hadn't got me that, and playing games didn't bring it back. I got it, and being only who I was with him, I kept it. So I touched the screen on my phone, went to favorites, and my fingertip touched the word Slim. I'd changed it, obviously. I put the phone to my ear. It rang twice before I heard, "Yeah, babe." "Hey," I replied. "Everything cool?" he asked. "I need to tell you something," I told him. Pause. Then, "I'm listening, Tess." I bit my lip. Then I shared, "The reason I don't really care about your drinking from the milk jug isn't because it's debatably ridiculous, the reasons a woman doesn't like a man drinking from a milk jug. It's because I don't much care what you do, because I like you in my kitchen." This was met with silence. I held my breath. I got more silence. That was when I considered maybe not letting it all hang out anymore. Then I heard Brock ask, "Debatably ridiculous?" The tightness forming in my chest released, and I felt my lips form a smile as my eyes closed. I opened them and said, "I will grant that just you drinking from it isn't all that bad, but we didn't get into other options, say, should you be eating cookies or cake and you get backwash into the milk. That's gross. No one wants to drink someone else's backwash, even if it's cookie or cake backwash. This is where it becomes a gray area." An attractive, low chuckle sounded in my ear, through which I also heard, "Babe." "Just saying," I said.
"Noted," Brock replied.
"Okay, I have cakes to bake."
"All right, darling, and I got the hint your girl's avoiding your cupcakes, but your man is not. So if you bring some home tonight, they will not go unappreciated."
"Will you drink milk out of a glass when you eat them?"
Another attractive, low chuckle sounded through, which I heard,
"We'll see how it goes."
"Right," I whispered.
"Go bake cakes."
"Okay, later, honey."
"Later, babe."
I disconnected. Then I smiled. I exited my car, entered my bakery, and commenced baking cakes. Chapter 7: Mountainous Swirls of Frosting. I stood at my front door waiting. Then it came. Martha stopped, folding her body into the driver's seat, and her eyes came over the roof of her car, up the steep rise at the edge of my front yard, the four steps up my front stoop to me, at my arched front door. She pressed her fingers to her lips, stretched them my way, and blew me a kiss. My throat got clogged, but I blew one back. She folded her petite body behind the wheel, started up her car, and rolled away. I watched until I lost sight of her brake lights, and then I watched for longer. Suffice it to say, my best friend, Martha Shockley, did not take the news very well that my ex-husband had hit me and raped me, even if it happened over 6 years ago. She had not been mad at me. She'd been devastated for me. Upon the news, she crumbled instantly. She hated this for me. And watching her absorb the burden of this information, I was reminded why I didn't tell her. Then she enveloped me in her arms and forced me to promise never, and I mean never, to hold something like that to myself again. "It's always been you for me, Tess, and I can't bear thinking it isn't me for you," she whispered. "I'm done backing off, hoping you'll sort your head on your own, honey. You gotta let me be there for you, and from now on, I sense something's wrong. I'm going to make you let me be there for you." I held her close, and I gave her that promise. Seriously, what else could I do? Needless to say, salad did not really go with Confessions of the Soul, so Martha ate 4 of the dozen cupcakes I brought home for Brock. But learning this news had not put Martha off her game, and when Brock showed, she watched him like a hawk, waiting for him to fuck up in some way so she could pounce. She did this with eyes constantly narrowed, so much I feared she'd give herself a migraine. Brock, however, was who he always was, even when I called him Jake. He was Brock. Sensing he was not going to fall at the first hurdle and expose the screaming dickhead he was hiding within, Martha finally gave up and left. Which led me to now. I closed the door, locked it, and turned to my living room. I lucked out. 4 years ago, after the bakery caught on and life started to get a lot less scary, I went house hunting, and the second house I looked at was this one. The couple who had previously owned it spent years fixing it up and getting it to exactly what they wanted it to be. Then the husband received word he was being transferred just weeks before the finishing touches were put on the last of the loving care and scads of cash they'd put into their house, a brand new kitchen. They were devastated at having to leave. I was elated, though I didn't share this. The dark wood floors had all been redone. The walls had all been reskimmed. The bathrooms were updated and fabulous. The basement had been finished into a huge family room where I kept my TV. Also down there was a powder room, laundry room, and a guest room that had its own bath. The furnace had been replaced, the roof reshingled, the yard landscaped, and a swamp cooler had been installed. But it was the kitchen that did it for me. The kitchen was phenomenal. An abundance of white cabinets, the wall ones all glass-fronted, quirky ones handcrafted to set in corners and spots that were tough to fill, slate floors, fabulous black-and-white tiled splashbacks, an enormous island in the middle, shiny marble countertops, restaurant-quality stainless steel appliances, including a narrow but fabulous wine fridge, inlaid cookbook holder, built-in microwave and double oven, one fan assisted. A baker's dream. My dream. It was $50,000 over budget, but I bought it because I thought it was worth it. Since then, even though the first year it was rough going, I never regretted it. As I walked through the front living room, off of which were 2 bedrooms and a bath to the double doorway that led to the kitchen, I thought the same thing. And when I hit the kitchen and saw Brock resting faded jeans-clad hips against the back counter, teeth sinking into a cupcake, half of a mountainous swirl of silver-dusted pale lilac frosting sprinkled with pastel candy confetti disappearing behind his full lips, I made an instant decision. I was going to go through my paperwork, find out the day I signed on the dotted line that made that house my home, and celebrate it with a huge, honking party every fucking year. "She's gone," I informed him, stopping on the other side of the island and putting my hands on it. I watched with admittedly captivated attention as he licked frosting from his lips after he swallowed, and then he asked, "How long's it take her to get home?" 20 minutes, I answered. His eyes locked with mine, and he said quietly, "You need to call her in 25 minutes, babe." My gaze held his as more warm gushiness hit my belly, knowing he got it. He read her mood, he knew she was hurting, and he wanted me to check in on her. "Okay," I whispered. He studied me, and I let him. Then he asked, still talking quietly, "How you doing?" Sharing that with her was not fun, I admitted.
"I could guess that part, Tess," he told me, again quietly.
I nodded and took a breath. Then I added, "I'm glad I did it. I'm sorry I didn't do it earlier. I'm glad it's done, and I'm glad I never have to do it again. That's as far as I've got."
"Right," he whispered.
He shoved the rest of the cupcake into his mouth. I watched him chew and swallow. Then he asked, "Would it piss you off to know that right about now I'm wondering if I walked in here yesterday because I missed my tests, or if it was because I missed her cupcakes?" I grinned at him. Then I answered, "No, because I am my cupcakes."
and it hit me right then that I was. On the outside, it could be tees, jeans, and flip-flops or pencil skirts, complicated designer blouses and high-heeled strappy sandals, or me being me, just about anything. But on the inside, it was all about mountainous swirls of delicately colored frosting with sprinkles of candy confetti, edible fairy dust, all on top of rich, moist cake. As that understanding settled inside me, that made me feel warm and gushy, too. "Come here, baby," he murmured. I caught the feel of the room and the look on his face and didn't delay in rounding the island and going there. When I got close, his arms folded around me and he pulled me in deep. Then his head dipped and he gave me a sweet, delicious, long, deep cupcake kiss. When he was done against his mouth, I whispered, "You taste good." To which he replied, "I know." I smiled against his lips and he returned the gesture. Then he lifted his head an inch. His arms gave me a squeeze and he said gently, "I want to spend the night." My belly dropped and I felt a convulsion between my legs. Then I replied, "Okay." His eyelids got heavy, his arms got tighter, my arms around him got tighter. His head descended and he kissed me again, this time longer, deeper, sweeter, and even more delicious. This went on for a while, long enough for me to get my fingers in his hair, long enough for Brock to get one of his hands up the back of my tee and the other one clamped tight on my ass, long enough for my nipples to swell and the area between my legs to get wet, long enough for me to think the bedroom was way, way, way too far away, and to be glad I kept the kitchen floor mopped, because that was where I wanted him to take me. But unfortunately, not long enough that we were still making out standing up in the kitchen rather than somewhere either naked or semi-naked, and thus at the point of no return when a knock came at the door. Brock's head came up on a low, short, frustrated growl, and his eyes went over my head toward the front door. I blinked at this unwelcome turn of events and twisted my neck to look in the same direction. It was closing on 10, too late for a caller, unless that caller was Martha, who forgot something. And Martha was the kind of gal who consistently forgot something no matter where she was, like her wallet, purse, credit card, and other such non-trivial items. Another knock came at the door and I felt Brock's arm squeeze. This also happened to coincide with his fingers digging pleasantly into my ass. That felt great. So great, I forgot someone was at the door, and I looked to him to see him looking at me. Oh my. He was still turned on, too. And let's just say that look on his face was nice. "Hold that thought, and for fuck's sake, whatever you do, hold that look," he growled before he let me go. I teetered slightly but managed to stay standing, turn, and watch him stalk toward the door. I walked the few feet to the island and put my hands on it as he unlocked the front door. Then my eyes dropped. On the corner of my island was a white ceramic pedestal cake stand with glass dome. Sweeping lines, simple and elegant. It cost a fortune, and I didn't care. I baked cakes. I needed fabulous cake stands. At that moment in my life, I owned 7 of them. In my home at the bakery, I had tons more. All of them fantastic, most of them expensive. They rotated to the top spot on my island, depending on my mood. In the one now were 6 cupcakes with mountainous swirls of frosting, glittering, edible fairy dust, and pastel confetti. 2 had mint green frosting, 2 had pale pink, 2 baby blue. This meant Brock had a cupcake while I was saying goodbye to Martha, before I made it to the kitchen when he was eating his second one. I felt my face go soft as I realized I missed that, too. He had a great body, the kind of body that no matter what age, but especially at 45, you worked on. He didn't shy away from his food, his beer, or his bourbon. He lived his life like he appreciated it, but he still took care of himself. I'd phoned him enough times when he told me he was at the gym or just got back from a run to know this was true, but he had a weakness for my cupcakes and my cake cakes. And my cookies. In fact, anything that came out of my oven, he made no bones about liking it. liking it more than anything else that I'd noticed he liked. And he didn't do this by handing me flowery compliments. He did this by consuming them with relish. And in that moment, I found I loved that. On that thought, I heard Brock snarl, "You have got to be shitting me," and my head snapped up.
"Who are you?"
At the sound of the familiar voice asking that question, my hand slid down the counter and curled tight around the edge as my chest compressed so deep it felt like I was being crushed. "Damien."
"It doesn't matter who I am. What matters is that you are not here. You are never here. You are never anywhere near this fucking house, Tess's fucking bakery, or Tess. I see you, or I hear you are. Honest to fucking God, I'll deal with you, and you do not want me to do that."
Brock was still snarling. It was vicious, biting, and I could feel his mood all the way across the living room, through the kitchen, and to me. It was filling the house. Beyond his pissed-off snap of electricity, this was rough and abrasive, scoring at my skin.
"I beg your pardon?"
Damien asked. Oh no, oh God, oh no. Damien was at least 3 inches shorter than Brock. Damien was probably 20 pounds lighter, if not more. Damien was lean in the sense he was lean, not muscled, no bulk. He was fit, but there was no power to his frame like there was to Brock's. In a physical tussle, Brock would take him. Easy. And Damien wouldn't give one flying fuck. Damien spent most of his time pissing in corners. Damien would not take to a threat well. Not at all. I started to move around the island to instigate damage control. My eyes on Brock's back, seeing he had his body between the door and the door jamb, his big frame blocking Damien from view, his back to me. Still, he lifted an arm out behind him like he had eyes in the back of his head and could see me starting to approach, and he barked, "Tess, do not fucking move." I halted at the side of the island.
"If Tess is in there, I'd like to speak to her,"
Damien, voice tight, requested.
"Did you not hear me 10 fucking seconds ago?
Brock asked.
"Who are you?"
Damien demanded to know.
"You didn't hear me 10 fucking seconds ago. Brock decided. "All right, I'll ask politely. Please move aside so I can talk with Tess,"
Damien asked. To that, Brock stated, "In 5 seconds, I'm closing the door.
You're not in your Escalade and on the road 60 seconds after that. I'm on the phone with the cops. No joke, no delay. Got that?"
Then, as he promised, he stepped out of the door, closed it in Damien's face, and locked it. I stood where I was at the side of the island. Brock moved to the window and yanked hard on the cord to the blinds to expose the glass. He stood in it, arms crossed, feet planted. I licked my lips. Brock didn't move a muscle. I put a hand out to the counter and held on. Brock didn't twitch. I counted to 10, then to 20. Brock leaned to the side, yanked the cord, and the blinds dropped with a crash. He turned and prowled through the living room toward me, one hand to his back pocket. He had his phone out by the time he stopped a foot away. I held my breath when I saw his face up close. "Honey," I whispered, but stopped speaking when his hand came up abruptly. I tensed as it came to me, but whisper soft and unbelievably sweet. His fingertips skimmed my cheek on their way to glide into my hair, where his hand curled around the back of my head. And he pulled me closer. I went because I didn't have a choice and because I wanted to. When I got near, I put my hands to his abs.
"Mood's broke, sweetness," he muttered. "And I need to make some calls. If you're tired, go get ready for bed, or if not, give your girl a call. I'll be in a minute and we'll get some shut-eye, yeah?"
"Is he gone?" I asked.
"Yeah."
I swallowed. His hand gave me a squeeze and I watched his eyes flare. Then he asked,
"He won't stay gone, will he?"
I shook my head. His mouth got tight. Then he said gently,
"Give me a minute to make some calls, baby."
I nodded. His hand gave me another squeeze and then sifted through my hair until it was gone. I moved to my bedroom.
Okay, it was safe to say I wasn't tittering with excitement 9 months ago when my abusive ex-husband who raped me contacted me for the first time in over 4 years, shattering the illusion I'd built that I was safe in a life that no longer contained him. And it was also safe to say I deliberated at length about going to lunch with him. But I loved his dad. Donald Heller was a good man. He adored me openly, and it cut to the quick when, to erase Damien from my life, I had to break ties with anything that had anything to do with Damien, including his dad. Donald tried to keep up a relationship with me, but I did not encourage this, and he finally quit trying. News that he was unwell broke my heart, gave me guilt, and just as Damien knew it would, spurred me to show at lunch. It was a mistake that I would pay for quite a bit, it would turn out. And this settled in my soul the troubling fact that I'd allowed myself to be played again by Damien. I left him the day after he raped me. My dog and I lived with Martha for the year and a half it took finally to get a divorce. Then I moved to my own apartment. And for that year and a half, Damien stopped at nothing to win me back. I couldn't take another year and a half. Unfortunately, this current scenario wasn't conducive to me finding that perfect nightgown to wear the first time I slept the night with Brock Lucas. We had slept together twice, both times me falling asleep with him on my couch while watching a movie. No, strike that. 3 times, adding last night. But except for last night, he'd always been gone before I woke, and we had never slept together in a bed. This was a momentous occasion that I should mentally and arguably more important fashionably prepare for. But at that moment, I didn't have it in me. I sorted through my nightgown drawer with trembling hands, and luckily my inherent girl power kicked in, and my fingers honed in on my cotton candy, purplish-pink embroidered eyelet nightie with its empire waist, spaghetti straps, and teensy-weensy ruffle at hem and bodice. Cute, girly, comfortable, therefore it seemed a casual choice. Like it was any other night, but it bared lots of skin, showed serious leg and a hint of cleavage, all of which stated plainly, I was making an effort for my man. Freaking perfect. I grabbed it and my glasses, took them to the bathroom, and did my nighttime gig. Contacts out, face washed, teeth brushed, and flossed. I changed clothes, slid my glasses on, and walked out. I heard Brock's rumble when I did. And this was what it said. No shit, Calhoun. I pressed my lips together at that name, scurried into the bedroom, dropped my clothes in the hamper, and scurried out. I knew he wanted to protect me, but I was 43 years old. I was in a situation. This situation was unlike the last. Now people knew. People who cared about me, people who had my back, and people willing to take my front and act as a shield. But it was high time I got my head out of the sand. Somehow I'd managed to be a survivor, but I was thinking that was pure luck, and it only had to happen because I'd left my head in the sand too long with a husband who was no good for me from the start, and I knew it. I just didn't do a thing about it. I needed to get my shit together. So I stopped in the kitchen doorway and leaned against it. Doing this with my eyes on a Brock Lucas who had his fist to his waist and his eyes on me. Then he did something beautiful. He trusted me, and the strength I was building inside enough to keep talking. You call the DA and you tell him to tell that asshole's attorneys that if he doesn't desist in harassing Tess, his boatload of legal problems will become a shitload. He already forged a fucking signature on bank documents, and we already got tape testimony and phone records that show for 6 months he's been dicking with her. So when the DA talks to his legal team, he needs to use the words stalking, harassment, assault, and sexual assault. I felt my chest rise with my indrawn breath, and I knew Brock saw it, but he kept trusting me, and thus talking. Statute of limitations is not out on that. No way in fuck that Tessa O'Hara, who runs a bakery and sprinkles fucking confetti on her cakes, will take the stand. Describe her nightmare, and he won't go down. I don't give a fuck if we have no physical evidence. She'll have any jury eating out of her hand. His lawyers will know that. Now I smell that guy's fucking cologne, Calhoun. She's pressing charges. This ends for her. Tonight. Make the fucking call. He listened for about 2 seconds, then grunted, Yeah.
and flipped his phone shut. I waited for him to shove it back into his pocket before I asked softly, "Are you okay?" "No," he answered harshly. "I had my tongue in my woman's mouth and my hand on her ass for the first time in 3 months. I like your ass. For 3 months, I spent a good deal of time thinking about having my hand back on your ass. What I didn't spend time thinking about is having my hand on your ass and someone knocking on the front door. And that someone being your slime ball motherfucking ex." "Well, there you go."
"Are you all right?" he asked.
"Kentucky is becoming more attractive." He stared at me. Then he grinned. His eyes swept the length of me and back again before he said low,
"Great nighty, babe."
"Thanks," I replied, tipping my head to the side, then to shift the mood and probably breaking all the rules of the game by doing something that would get me kicked out of the sisterhood. I shared, "If I'd have known you were spending the night, I would have carved out some time to take a trip to the mall to buy a silky, sexy nighty that shouted, 'Occasion.'" With this, I lifted up my hands and shook them, then dropped them and continued. "Though it would be carefully selected, so when you saw me in it, you'd think that was what I wore to bed every night when it isn't. But since I didn't know, I had to make do, and this is what you get." To that, I flicked my hand to my cotton candy nightie.
"I'm thinking you did all right in a pinch," he noted.
"I'm glad," I said on a smile.
"So what do you wear to bed every night?" he asked.
"Well," I thought about it, then finished. "Various versions of this. Though I will warn you, so you don't get your hopes up, some of them don't have ruffles." To that, he burst out laughing, and he did it while walking to me. He stopped laughing and walking a half a foot away. With his head tipped down to me, he said quietly, "Call your girl, sweetness, and then let's hit the sack, yeah?" I nodded, but asked, "I'm sensing our earlier activities have been scheduled to recommence at a later date." He lifted a hand and curled it around the side of my neck as he dipped his face close to mine. Then he said, "It sucks, but yeah." His hand gave me a squeeze while he went on. "You're right, this is an occasion. It's important, and that douchebag showing marred it. When that happens between us again, it's going to be just you and me without the ghost of that guy tarnishing it." I liked that. I liked that he wanted to give me that. I liked knowing us connecting in that way was as important to him as it was to me. And I liked holding the knowledge that he wanted to make it special. I liked it so much, my hand came up. My fingers curled around his wrist at my neck. I got up on my toes and I touched my mouth to his. When I rocked back, I whispered, "Okay, I'll call Martha and meet you in bed." He bent forward an inch, touched his forehead to mine, then pulled back and dropped his hand. I released his wrist, and he moved around me and toward the bedroom. I went to my purse and dug out my phone. Then I called Martha. She was home. She wasn't fine, but she just opened a bottle of red wine in an attempt to get that way, or at least put herself to sleep. We chatted until I heard the tremble go out of her voice. Then I hung up. I walked to my bedroom to find a bare-chested Brock, slim, Lucas in it. On his back in my bed, sheets to waist but hands to his face, rubbing. Those hands dropped when I hit the room, but not before I remembered the last time he was in my bed. Pressing the butts of his palms to his forehead, his manner conflicted, and his expression would provide further evidence of that when he turned it to me. This made a curl of apprehension writhe in my belly. He rolled to his side and got up on a forearm while asking, "Babe, you're gonna sleep on your feet or get in bed?" I came unstuck, moved to my bed, pulled back the covers, and got in cross-legged. I took off my glasses, set them on the nightstand, grabbed my tub of moisturizer, and commenced moisturizing my face. Face moisturized, I sucked up the courage to ask, "When I came in, what was on your mind?" To my surprise, he didn't hesitate to answer. "What was on my mind was that Calhoun was the lead on the investigation into Heller. Calhoun is a good man, a dedicated man. He and a lot of guys spent 3 years building up that takedown. They made 12 arrests with that sweep, and 10 of those 12 are major players in Heller's operation. That takedown was huge. Planned and orchestrated with precision, and the man hours behind it are incalculable. No case is rock solid. But what they got on all those guys is the closest I've ever seen. And I was thinking that if that asshole fucks with you, and I do what I had the near overwhelming urge to do tonight when I looked at his motherfucking face, seeing he had the balls to be standing right at your front door at 10 o'clock at night, I'll fuck all that. I was watching him as he spoke. When he stopped, I asked, "What urge?" Brock blinked up at me. Then he asked, I repeated, "What urge?" "Yeah, what urge?" He stared at me 3 seconds before he leaned into me, grabbed the tub of moisturizer out of my hand, and leaned deeper, half tossing, half placing it on my nightstand. With his strong arm tight around my belly and hip, he pulled me into the bed and into him. Once he had me settled, arms still firm around me, he said softly, "I am not a normal guy, Tess." I'd already got that. "Okay," I whispered. "I'm the oldest boy. I got 2 sisters, a brother, and Mom got us all in the divorce. Dad's a decent guy, but that didn't mean he didn't jack her around. He did, a lot. Too much. He and I have come to uneasy terms, and since he jacked her around so much, this took a while, but because of his shit, I grew up being the man of the family. I did not learn to be the man I am from my dad. The man I am was ingrained in me starting at 7. I wasn't sure I understood what he was saying, but I was sure I thought it was fascinating. And furthermore, I very much liked lying pressed close to him in my bed, with his arm tight around me while he told me stories of his life. "Okay," I whispered again when he didn't go on. "What I'm saying is, you do not fuck with a woman who means something to me. And when I say that, I mean you do not fuck with a woman who means something to me." "Oh my, I got it." "You wanted to hurt Damien," I said quietly.
"Hurt? Yeah, in a way he'd feel that pain every fucking day for the rest of his motherfucking life. In a way he'd never forget me. In a way he'd never forget the lesson I taught him. And in a way he'd think about you, and instead of you giving precious headspace to wishing you never met him, his headspace would be filled with wishing he never fucked with you."
Before my mind told me to do it, my body pressed closer to his. But if my body asked my mind wouldn't have argued. I slid my hand up his hard chest, along his corded neck to come to rest on his stubble jaw. Looking deep into his eyes, I admitted, "I don't have words." His arm got tighter and his face tilted on the pillow to get closer before he whispered, "Tess, I learned something early about you. You are the only woman I know who doesn't need words. Everything you do speaks for you and it never lies. Just your hand on me, babe, said it all." He held my eyes and I held my breath because he said that like he liked it, not a little, a whole bunch. I nodded. His face got soft. It dipped to mine where he touched my mouth with his. When he pulled back, he murmured, "Hit your light, darling." I nodded again and rolled. I turned out the light, then curled on my side, pulled the covers over my shoulder, shoved my hands under my cheek, and called, "Night, honey." Half a second later, I found my body hauled across the bed, my ass in the curve of his hips, his knees cocked into mine, his front pressed to my back, his arm tight around my belly, and his lips at my hair. Only then did he murmur, "Night, Tess." Brock Lucas spooned. I fell asleep smiling. Chapter 8. Wild Thing. The soft strains of Fiona Apple's "I Know" forced my eyes open to the early morning light. I listened to her contralto, her piano, the soft strum of a bass, and the slow, gentle beat of a drum for a few long moments before the volume started to increase. Then I got up on a forearm, reached out, and hit the button that would freeze the volume like I usually did, so I could listen to my music in the mornings. When I reached for the covers to shove them off, my body moved backward across the bed and hit something very, very solid and very, very warm. Oh, man, how could I forget? Brock was there. And boy, was he there, his hard, heated body behind me, his strong arm around me. I felt his lips at the skin of my neck. "Honey," I whispered. Those lips trailed up, then I felt teeth nip my earlobe. A shiver slid through me. Then a rough, sleepy, deep, "Morning, baby." Oh, my! His lips slid to behind my ear as his hand at my belly slid up my ribs, and I held my breath until his hand stopped. I let out my breath and held it again when the backs of his knuckles started stroking feather light at the bottom swell of my breast. Oh, my. I pressed back into him as he pushed into me and his tongue touched the skin behind my ear, at the same time his thumb disengaged from his knuckles and swiped my breast just under my nipple. At that, a throb pulsed through me. "Brock," I breathed. "Unless you got an early morning emergency cake to bake, sweetness," he growled in my ear. "Our earlier activities are scheduled to recommence right about now." "The White House tends to give me plenty of advance warning," I quipped breathily. "Fucking fantastic," Brock muttered, rolled me to face him. His hand went in my hair, twisted gently, and tugged back, but he didn't have to do that. My arm was winding around him, and my head was dipping back so he could have my mouth. And he took it. Brock had not lied with what he said in my kitchen when he came back. The first time he made love to me had not been planned. It wasn't a seduction. It started as usual. We were just messing around. But before that night, he'd always kept it under control. It had usually been about me, him exploring me, or him helping me to get off. But something happened, and even as much as I thought about it, to that day, I had no idea what it was. But whatever it was, it snapped his control, and he picked me up from the couch, carried me to the bedroom, and off we went. This was different from all of that except the last. Because Brock didn't have a plan. Brock wasn't protecting me from exposing myself, giving too much to a man whose name I did not know. There was no reason for Brock to control the situation, his reaction or mine. So he didn't. And even bigger than that night when his control snapped, now he didn't need it. With one touch of our tongues lying in my bed in the weak early morning light of dawn, it exploded. And even better than any other time, this wasn't about him exploring me and helping me to get off. This was about us exploring each other. For the first time ever, I was free to give as good as I got. So I fucking did. It was wild. It was heated. It was energetic. There was a lot of rolling, groping, tongues, teeth, fingers, moans, groans, whimpers, sighs, and gasps as he took. I took, he gave, and I gave. And it was when I was giving, crouched low between his cocked legs, my mouth taking him deep when he knifed up. His hands came under my armpits, and he hauled me up his body between his legs at the same time he rolled me to my back. I wound my arms around his shoulders as I opened my legs, and his hips fell through. His eyes locked with mine the second before he thrust deep. My neck arched, my arms spasmed around him, and I lifted my knees to press my thighs tight to his sides. "Tess, mouth," he growled. My neck righted, and his mouth was on mine, his tongue in my mouth as he rode me deep. God, so deep. Hard, God, so hard. And sweet, God, God, so unbelievably sweet. It built. It was fast. It was hot. And it was going to be incredibly good. Before it swept over me, I tore my mouth from his, shoved my face in his neck and moaned, "Brock." "Oh, yeah, baby, fuck yeah," he grunted, thrusting deep. I drew in a sharp breath and came hard. Then I came down, my head dropping back to the pillows, and I had the opportunity to watch his face as I felt him move inside me, and I saw clear as day, Brock Lucas liked right where he was. A lot. A whole lot. He had an arm around my waist, grinding me down, his weight in his other forearm in the bed. I wrapped my legs around him, tilting my hips up for him, and this made him growl deep from his chest. His eyes locked with mine. I kept one arm tight around his shoulders, and my other hand went to his face. thumb sweeping his cheek, then his lips. He buried that face in my neck, groaned, "Tess," and planted himself to the root on another groan as he came. I slid my hand from his face into his hair, tipped my head so my face was in his neck, and I pressed my lips against his heated skin, feeling the tickle of the long hairs that curled there. Then I closed my eyes and took him in with three senses, smelling his skin, feeling him all around and buried inside me, and listening to his heavy breaths. He gave me his weight for approximately 2 seconds before he gathered me in both his arms, miraculously got up to his knees, taking me with him, still connected, and keeping our bodies linked. He twisted, falling to his hip and dropping to his back with me on top. "Nice. Nice," I whispered into his neck. I heard his deep, attractive chuckle before I heard his head move on the pillow. Then I felt his lips against my hair where he kissed me. Oh my. That was nice, too. He had one arm wrapped around the small of my back, and when the other hand drifted up my spine to play with my hair, I lifted my head to look down at him. He tilted his chin, his quick silver eyes catching mine, and he grinned, sated, content, and amused. The sweet, sultry, warm hum of that mood saturated the air and settled like bliss against my skin as he muttered, "Wild thing." I blinked. Then I asked, "Sorry?" "Baby, fuck." His arm gave me a squeeze. "You were all over me." I blinked again. Then I felt my body get tight. Damn. I was a follower, not a leader in bed. Careful, thoughtful, keeping ears and eyes open to make sure what I was doing was enjoyed, and noting what my partner liked when I did it, so I could keep doing it or cataloging it to do it again. I did not lose control. I did not let go. This meant the 2 times I'd had sex with Brock were the 2 best times of my life by far. Like, far as in an ocean far. In fact, without a fair amount of work for my partner, and usually they gave up. I rarely climaxed during sex or any part of the festivities. But just now, I had not been in my head and paying attention. I had been in the zone and acting on instinct. My body, what it was feeling and its needs, ruled my mind, and my mind had totally checked out. Totally. Damn. I started to pull up when Brock's hand cupped the back of my head but slid down, taking my hair with it so his fingers were curled around the back. His palm was warm on my neck under my ear, and his thumb was against my face by my hairline. As his hand positioned, he whispered, "Hey." My eyes slid through his to come to rest on the pillow by his head, and I inched up again, but his hand tensed and he semi-repeated, "Tess, hey." I stilled, but kept my gaze on the pillowcase, to which I got a squeeze of his arm around my back, pulling my body close, and a growled, "Eyes, babe." My eyes slid to his. His looked deep into them. Then his hand at my head brought my face super close to his, and he whispered, "What the fuck, baby?" I started, but a shadow shifted into his eyes and stayed there as he cut me off. "Jesus, did I hurt you?" I shook my head slightly and said, "No, it's just..." I trailed off because I didn't know what it was. His thumb started skimming my cheek light and sweet as he prompted gently, "It's just what?" "I don't know what," I whispered. He held my eyes and didn't say anything. Then I found my mouth telling him, "I lost control." He did a slow blink. Then he asked,
"Is this a bad thing?"
"I don't know," I began, watching him closely, then whispered, "Is it?" He stared at me, eyes widening in unconcealed disbelief. Then, quick as a flash, both of his arms were super tight around me, even as he pressed his head back into the pillows and roared with laughter. About 2 seconds into his hilarity, he rolled us both, losing our connection as he did, but settling with his weight on me, his hips between my legs, and his laughter sounding against the skin of my neck where he shoved his face. "Brock," I wheezed, "I can't. He lifted his head and looked down at me, smiling huge as he planted one forearm in the bed, taking his weight off me, and curled his other hand around my neck right under my jaw. "Breathe," I finished. His thumb stroked my jaw as he kept smiling down at me, but he didn't say a word. I think I should get up and...
Yeah, babe, you can get up in a second, he interrupted me. But first, let's get something straight, all right?
I held his eyes and bit my lip. He looked at my mouth and pressed his lips together as his eyes danced. Then he unpressed them to say,
I intend to spend a lot of time doing just what we did, adding variations, positions, different locations, and I'm gonna be creative.
Oh my. I felt the walls of my womb contract. He went on.
You ever? He dipped his face close, mouth and eyes still smiling. Ever lock onto your control while we're enjoying each other, I'll know one thing, and that is, I'm not doing it right.
Oh my. Brock, I whispered, but stopped when his face dipped even closer.
Baby, that was fucking phenomenal. Nothing you did, not one thing I didn't like, and most of it I fucking loved. Mark this, sweetness, I like it wild, and you were wild, and I loved every fucking minute of it. I do not know what the other men you took to your bed taught you, but whatever it was fucked.
Lose that ghost in your eyes, Tess, because baby, you're a goddamn natural.
Because his words made that warm gushiness invade my insides, I lifted my hand to his neck, then slid it into his hair and lifted my head as I pulled his down to me. My head tilted, his slanted, and I kissed him, wet and hopefully sweet.
He gave me his weight as his arms wrapped back around me. He rolled me again to the top, and he took over the kiss, and his was also wet. His was deep, and his was definitely sweet.
He broke the kiss, but not the connection of our mouths, so his lips moved against mine when he whispered, "Totally a natural." I smiled against his mouth and into his eyes. Brock smiled back the same way. Then he muttered, "Shower," to which I did a full body tremble right on top of him. He felt it, and I watched close up as his smile got lazy. He hauled us both out of bed, out of the room, into the bathroom, and then into the shower. After that, I made him coffee and toast, and later made out with him on my doorstep in full view of a waking neighborhood. My arms around his shoulders, my body pressed deep, our tongues tangled. His arms were tight around me, with one hand carrying coffee in a travel mug, and the fingers of his other hand holding a half-eaten slice of toast. He lifted his head, looked into my eyes, and whispered, "I'll text you the address to my place. Come prepared to spend the night. I'm doing dinner."
"All right," I whispered back, "but I'm doing dessert."
His mouth twitched before he agreed. "You got it, sweetness. Now let me go before I do something we'll both get arrested for, like throw you on the lawn and give your neighbors a show."
I let him go. He chuckled low, tipped his chin up at me, turned, and jogged down to his pickup at the same time taking a bite of toast. I watched him drive away, and I didn't give one shit that I should have played it cool and walked right into my house and shut my door. I stood there and watched until I couldn't see his truck anymore. Only then did I go in. I turned on my music, and I didn't turn on Fiona Apple. I was an equal opportunity music lover, and whatever struck my fancy normally didn't unstrike it. So, considering The Devil Went Down to Georgia and In America were kick-ass songs, I owned the Charlie Daniels superhit CD. And that was what I listened to while I got ready to face the day. I couldn't say it was all my gig, but I sang The Devil and In America out loud, and one could not say the South's gonna do it again was not the shit. Dressed and ready to go forth and bake cakes, I got in my car thinking that was the best morning of my whole fucking life. Chapter 9. Dinner at Brock's. I was sitting in my car looking up at the apartment building, scanning the numbers on the doors, looking for number 16, Brock's apartment. I was trying really hard not to make a judgment about the state of his apartment complex.
if one could call it that. It was off the one-way section of Lincoln, just up from Spear and perpendicular to the road. There was a small spread of tarmac in front of a very deep, long, two-story building. 8 apartments on bottom, 8 on top. The doors faced an exposed walkway. The stairs leading up to the top level on the ends of either side were iron, rusting, and looked more than a little scary. And the 2 padlocked sheds off the parking lot, one smaller one with the stenciled word laundry, and the other one bigger, and maybe not too intelligently having the stenciled word storage on it, did nothing for the feel of the place. Sometime in the summer, someone clearly made an effort. However, they also just as clearly got sidetracked. In Denver, if you planted flowers in the arid climate, you needed to tend them. And this tending mostly had to do with adding copious amounts of water, but it also didn't hurt to pull weeds. Now it was a still warm mid-October, and in the 2 half barrels that flanked the short entry from Lincoln to the building, and the 4 that decorated the top and foot of both stairwells, had a riot of green, healthy weeds. An equal riot of brown, dead bits. And some straggly, weak petunia blossoms that had obviously struggled valiantly against the odds, but clearly should be put out of their misery, and not only because autumn had settled on the Rocky Mountains. Oh, well, whatever. He was a man, a single man, with a Harley Fat Boy, and a beat-up pickup truck that Martha was right about. It needed to be traded up, and that trade-up should have happened around a decade ago. This wasn't a big surprise, and truthfully, I might be concerned if he had a picture-perfect house in a suburb that looked like Ada haunted the place. That would be bad. I was turning to gather my overnight case, purse, and the white bag with the robin's egg blue ink stamp of hummingbirds and hibiscus blossoms around the words Tess's Cakes when my phone rang. It was probably Brock, though why I thought this, I didn't know. He said to be there at 6, and although I took time out for my kickboxing class and extended that with a side trip to the mall, I still left the bakery early to go home and get ready. The kids who worked for me were good, and the shelves, displays, and cake stands were stocked with plenty of goodies to see them through, so I didn't have a problem doing this, and did it often. So it was now 2 to 6. I wasn't late. I was actually, if you got down to it, early. Maybe there was a change of plans. In the 4 months we were seeing each other, this happened. Not regularly. Brock didn't usually miss seeing me, and if he had to change plans, it usually meant he had to see me later or leave early, but it was rare he'd cancel. In fact, thinking about it, I didn't recall that ever happening. Therefore, curious, I pulled out my phone and saw it said, "Unknown caller." I touched the screen as I felt my brows draw together, put it to my ear, and greeted, "Hello?"
"Yo, bitch, you got Elvira."
I blinked at my dashboard. Then I said, hey.
Hey, right back at ya. Listen, your homegirl gave me a number because I called her because Gwen and me were doing a little looking around in Cherry Creek during my extended lunch break, and we saw you in the lingerie section of Nordstrom's.
"Oh," I replied.
"Okay.
So?" she asked, and I felt my brows draw together again when she said no more.
"So?" I asked back. "So what gives?"
"What gives?"
"Yeah, what gives? You were drinking Cosmos with us in Stepford Country when we were talking about your bad news boy, and I do not think it bodes well 2 days later that you're in the lingerie section of Nordstrom's,"
she stated, then announced, "This here's a phone intervention."
"A phone intervention?" "A phone intervention. See, I work for Hawks Elgato and Hawks Gwen's man, which, incidentally, is why I'm allowed to take extended lunch breaks in the lingerie section of Nordstrom's with the company credit card. But anyway, Gwen pumped Hawk for intel about your bad news boy, and so did I. And we put our heads together. Hawk, well, he says your boy is bad news. Not that we didn't know that already, but Hawk agreeing, considering he's Hawk, confirms it."
Damn it all to hell. It was only me who could run into a well-intentioned but nosy, inappropriately meddling and slightly frightening black woman at a really bad baby shower, and it was only Martha who would give her her number and then in turn give her mine.
"Elvira,"
I don't really know you, but thanks for looking out for me, but it's unnecessary. It's all good.
Just you saying that means it's all bad. We've decided it's Cosmos Equins. Trace and Cam are in, and so is Martha, tonight, 8 o'clock. Don't worry about eating, because I'm doing boards.
I can't make it because I'm having dinner with Brock. This was met with a moment of silence. Then a muttered, oh boy.
I looked through the windshield up to the top floor and saw it. Apartment 16, on the end next to some tall, bushy pine trees that meant if he had side windows, those trees would block out the light. I pulled in a light breath. Then I looked at my dashboard and whispered, I left my husband the day after he raped me. I heard her suck in a breath, and hers wasn't light. This was after 8 years of a not-great marriage, then 2 years of him hitting me, not regularly, but when he did it hard. This came out during the questioning at the station, and Brock was observing. When he heard me say I'd been raped, he threw a chair. I heard it. I heard the crash. He threw a chair, and they had to drag him out so he wouldn't interrupt the questioning to get to me. Elvira, for once, was silent. I, for once, was not. His sister was raped, as was an old girlfriend. His father jacked his mother around, and he assumed the role of man of the house at 7 years old. When a woman means something to him, he takes care of her. He told me this, and I believe him. I mean something to him. I don't know what you've heard or who this hot guy is, but I know who Brock is to me. Now, I'd love to have Cosmos with you and the girls, but I won't listen to anyone trash-talking Brock because he also means something to me. And only he and I know what's going on between us. All that other shit, well, Elvira, it just doesn't matter. She again was silent. I again was not. Honey, you're the third person in 6 years I told that to. Martha just found out last night. Brock heard me say it, and he's unfortunately got experience with this kind of thing. He knew I'd buried it, and he's helping me to move on from it. This is not a man you don't trust. He has my back, he has my front, and he's handling me with care. Trust me.
All right, girl, she whispered.
And thank you again for being cool. Any other time with any other guy when all this other stuff isn't happening, I'd appreciate it. But this isn't what it seems. It's something a whole lot different.
Okay, she said quietly.
Okay, I whispered.
We didn't mean, she started, but I quickly cut her off.
I know you didn't, honey.
I won't say anything to them about you, you know, she assured me, and I closed my eyes.
Then I opened them and told her, you don't have to keep this secret. I did for too long. I didn't do anything to be ashamed of, so there's no reason it shouldn't be in the open.
Still, girl, I'll let you do the talking.
Okay, maybe she was nosy, meddling, and a little scary, but she was also very sweet.
All right, I replied.
Over Cosmos Equins.
Sounds good.
Another night.
Yeah.
Silence then, softly.
He threw a chair.
I smiled at the dash, but my smile was for me. Then softly back, I replied, yeah, he threw a chair.
I'm thinking Hawk don't know that, she remarked.
Well, maybe you should tell him.
Bet your boots I will. I got one on Hawk. I never got one on Hawk.
I laughed softly. Through this, Elvira said,
have fun with your hot guy.
I smiled again. That one was for her, even though she couldn't see. Then I said, I will.
Later, girlfriend.
Later, Elvira. I took the phone from my ear and hit end call. I dropped it in my purse, gathered up my stuff, was sure to bleep the locks on my car, and I braved the rickety steps. I stood in front of door number 16 and knocked. 2 seconds later, it was thrown open by a tall, gorgeous, rounded, dark-haired, silver-eyed woman with a flushed face and a visible desire to kill. I took a step back. She whirled to face the apartment and shrieked,
Dylan, you do that to your brother one more time and it won't be the naughty step when we get home. I don't know what it'll be, I just know you won't like it.
I checked the impulse to grab my phone and inspect the text Brock sent me, to make certain I got the apartment number right when she turned back to me, smiled sweetly, and said, "Hey, you must be Tess." I blinked. She went on, "I'm Laura, Slim's sister." My entire body seized, and I feared an acute onset of epilepsy when I heard Brock's rumble coming from deep in the apartment. "Jesus, Laura, what the fuck?" To which Laura, apparently Brock's sister, turned back to face the apartment and snapped, "Slim, we tried not to drop the F-bomb in front of the kids." "Great, you're in your house or at Little League or whatever the fuck. Try not to do it. Your hooligans are systematically tearing up my place. Anything goes." He appeared in the door by his sister, grinned at me, leaned out, extending a long arm. His fingers closed on my wrist, and he pulled me into the apartment, whereupon his arms locked around me, and he shuffled me in deeper, and before I knew it, his mouth was on mine, and he laid a hot, sweet, deep, but short, wet one on me.
"Gross, Uncle Slim!"
a child's voice shouted.
"Yeah, gross!" another one chimed in. "I like her shoes,"
another one, this one clearly female and clearly having good taste, observed. Brock's head lifted, and I had three thoughts. One, even with an audience of family members, some of them being children, he could really kiss. Two, I was obviously meeting members of Brock's family, and I was in no way prepared. And three, I was glad I gave the flip-flops a rest and was wearing a pair of sexy strappy sandals, really good jeans, and a complicated designer blouse. Before I could utter a noise or perhaps gather my thoughts, Brock divested me of the purse and overnight bag on my shoulder, both he dumped on the floor, the white bag filled with my famous bakery fresh snickerdoodles, this he tossed on the coffee table, and turned me to the apartment, one arm sliding around my shoulders and holding my front close to his side. He made introductions. "Babe, this is my sister Laura, her hooligans Grady and Dylan, my princess Ellie, and my mom, Fern. Everyone, this is Tess." His mom, Fern? He kissed me with tongues in front of his mom, Fern? I scanned the room, and a lot forced itself into my brain. Too much to process. So much, my mind started to shut down, and it took every bit of effort I had not to lapse into catatonia. First, the door had been closed, and Laura, Brock's gorgeous sister, was standing by it, grinning like a madwoman. Second, there were two dark-haired boys on the floor, both of them in little boy football uniforms, sans shoulder pads, both of them appearing at some point in the not-too-distant past to have rolled around in the dirt for a good length of time, and my guess was that was at least 5 hours. Both of them appeared to be arrested in mid-wrestling match, and both of them had green Kool-Aid mustaches. Third, there was an adorable little dark-haired girl wearing a princess dress costume, complete with fake satin top and masses of tulle skirt. This ensemble, complemented by clickety-clack little girl plastic high-heeled shoes. She was sitting on the couch with her legs straight in front of her, feet bouncing while she gamely licked a melting popsicle, but was struggling in this endeavor as evidenced by it dripping purple on the fake satin of the top of her dress. Fourth, an older woman with thick silver hair, blue eyes, and an overall look that screamed, "Grandma!" was standing in a doorway, grinning at me like a madwoman. And last, Brock's furnishings were, at a glance, approximately 2.75 steps up from the overall feel of his apartment complex. But at least the place appeared clean, if not tidy. And when I say not tidy, I say this in the sense that it also reflected that Brock was a single man with a Harley fat boy and a beat-up pickup truck that Martha was right about. Hey, I greeted. "We're a surprise, we know. We were on our way back from junior football league practice and we thought we'd stop by," Fern said, coming farther into the room, and I saw she was holding a dish towel,
We brought KFC because the kids had to eat. We didn't know Slim was expecting company.
Okay, I told her, then added stupidly, cool.
She made it to me and held out her hand. I took it, and her fingers closed around mine. Her other hand came up and closed around our clasped hands. As she did this, she looked into my eyes and did a mom scan, which left me feeling mildly ill at ease considering the fact that I was pretty sure her blue eyes read all the words written on my soul. Therefore, she knew I'd lied to my mother when I was 10 and told her I didn't try to shave my legs when the nicks on them proved this to be false, and that I let Jimmy Moriarty get to second base at the homecoming dance my sophomore year in high school. She released me from the scan, let go of my hand, stepped back, and luckily didn't announce to the room I was a floozy who lied to her mother. They're about to leave, Brock stated, to which Princess Ellie shouted,
No, we're not! We're watching Tangled!
And to this, Dylan or Grady, it had not been pointed out who was who, shouted in return,
We're not watching Tangled! We watched Tangled this weekend 5 times!
He swung his head to Laura and whined,
Mom! I'm sick of Tangled!
I'm not sick of Tangled. That movie is awesome. I found my mouth again, stupidly muttering.
See?
Ellie shrieked, gesturing to me with her popsicle, off which flew a massive chunk of purple ice that plopped on the shag, yes, shag, carpet a foot away from Brock's motorcycle boots.
Uncle Slim's girlfriend wants to watch Tangled.
I didn't exactly say that, but then again, she was probably 5. And 5-year-old girls heard what they wanted to hear. In fact, lots of 55-year-old girls heard what they wanted to hear. Fern rushed to the ice on the floor with her dish towel while Laura scolded,
Ellie, careful with that popsicle. Do we have to watch Tangled, do we? Do we?
Dylan or Grady whined.
Dylan, pipe down. We're not watching anything. We're going home and getting cleaned up for bed.
I don't want to go to bed!
Dylan and Ellie shouted in unison. At this point, the front door opened, and a tall, beer-gutted older man with dark hair, shot with not a small amount of silver and silvery gray eyes, strolled in shouting,
Jesus H. Christ, what's the commotion?
Grandpa!
Ellie and Dylan screamed, Ellie tossing the popsicle aside only for it to land with a plop on Brock's couch in her haste to scramble off said couch, and raced Dylan to hug the older gentleman's legs. But when they did this, with the velocity and force they hit him, he went back 2 paces before they successfully latched on. Luckily, disaster was averted, and he kept his feet. I was rooted to the spot, looking at a man whose somewhat withered good looks stated firmly he was Brock's father, as I felt the slap of attitude hit the room and heard Brock mutter under his breath, Fuck. For once, the mood in the room didn't come from Brock. When my head woodenly turned in the direction from whence it emanated, I saw it was coming from Fern.
Tell me he is not here, she hissed.
Uh-oh.
Mom, Brock started.
Slim, tell me he is not here, she somewhat repeated with scary mini-pauses and equally scary emphasis. Brock's arm gave me a squeeze. My head tipped dazedly back to look up to him, and when I caught his eyes, he immediately informed me. This is why I'm never fucking home.
Well, that answered one question. If Brock was never home, he didn't need a fabulous pad.
Hey, Lori, honey. Hey, Slim. Hey, Grady,
Brock's father greeted with smiles.
Hey, Grandpa,
Grady returned.
Hey there, Dad,
Laura said hesitantly, her manner watchful. Brock's father's look became cautious when he muttered,
Hey, Fern.
Cobb, she bit off, clearly deciding not to go with the option of leaping forward and scratching out his eyes as this would scar her grandchildren for life. But I could tell she was hanging on to that control by a thread. Brock's father's gaze hit me, his head tipped to the side, and his eyes flashed back and forth between his son and me about 7 times before he said,
Hey there, little lady.
Dad, this is Tess, Brock introduced.
She's Uncle Slim's girlfriend,
Ellie shouted,
her fingers curled into Cobb Lucas's pants, her back arched at an impossible angle, her grape popsicle-stained mouth smiling huge up at her grandfather. He looked down at her, put a big hand gentle on her head, and asked softly,
"Is she my Ellie?"
"Yeah," Ellie cried. "And she wears pretty shoes, and she's gonna watch Tangled with me right now."
Cobb's eyes came to me. They were curious, searching even, but like he looked at Fern, hesitant as he muttered,
"That's fantastic, sweetheart."
Into this conversation, Fern asked acidly, "There a reason you're here, Cobb?"
"Well, actually..."
His eyes moved from Fern to Brock to me and back again.
"Yeah."
"I'll bet there is," she mumbled bitingly. I caught sight of Laura bugging her eyes out at Brock, and with that I decided to take action. I slid out from under Brock's arm, then leaned and carefully took the dish towel out of Fern's hand. I walked to the couch and grabbed the bag of snickerdoodles at the same time I swiped up the popsicle and announced, "All right, kids, in this bag are bakery fresh snickerdoodles I made at my shop for your uncle. Whoever gets to the kitchen and gets their hands and mouths clean gets a cookie. Who's with me?" Dylan and Ellie instantly abandoned their grandfather and raced to the kitchen, Ellie hindered by her heels nearly taking a header twice. Grady got to his feet, eyeing the bag, and his mother clearly weighing cookies versus hanging with the adults in a tense situation, and not surprisingly, cookies won out. So he sauntered after his brother and sister. I followed them and didn't look back, as I was confronted with a kitchen Fern obviously just cleaned and shut the swinging door behind me. I set about hiding 9 of the dozen snickerdoodles, Brock's favorite, and setting out the other 3 at the same time, supervising cleaning up 3 tired, wound-up kids. When they were clean and sitting at Brock's scarred wooden kitchen table eating cookies and sucking back milk from glasses I'd poured, Grady, the oldest, my guess, Ellie around 4 or 5, Dylan around 6 or 7, and Grady around 8 or 9, informed me,
"Grandma isn't Grandpa's biggest fan."
How did I respond to that? "Well, sometimes things get complicated with adults," I told him lamely. Grady kept the information flowing.
"Dad isn't his biggest fan either. Dad says he's a douchebag."
I pressed my lips together to stop the giggle escaping. Then I said, "Douchebag isn't a really nice word. But that said, your father is entitled to his opinion." Grady kept speaking.
"Uncle Slim puts up with him, but I think he does it for Mom and Aunt Jill because they like him. But Uncle Levi thinks he's a douchebag, too. I heard him and Uncle Slim talking when Uncle Slim told Uncle Levi to cool it about Grandpa because it was bothering Aunt Jill. But Uncle Levi said that Grandpa never paid child report, and he had a bunch of girlfriends other than Grandma, so he didn't owe him anything, and neither did Aunt Jill."
Apparently, Grady had a mind like a sponge. Though he got one thing wrong. Child report, I was guessing, was child support. And I was also guessing having a father that didn't pay it and played around on your mom was not good.
"I like Grandpa,"
Ellie piped up. "Of course you do, honey," I said, smiling at her from my place leaning against the counter.
"I put up with him like Uncle Slim,"
Grady announced.
"Grady's gonna be Uncle Slim when he grows up,"
Dylan, sporting a milk mustache, shared. Grady did not challenge this information. Instead, he declared proudly,
"He played first base, and I play first base. He played linebacker, and I play linebacker. His job is scary, Mom says, but he does it to keep kids like me safe, so that's what I'm gonna do, too. When I get old, I'm gonna keep kids safe."
I was feeling warm and gushy again. "That's a fantastic goal, Grady," I said quietly.
"Do you got kids?"
Dylan asked. "No, honey, I don't have any kids."
"That's good. When you marry Uncle Slim, you can be Mom to Rex and Joel,"
Grady offered, and I blinked. "Sorry, honey, who?"
"Rex and Joel, Uncle Slim's kids, our cousins,"
Grady told me. My body went completely still, including my heart and lungs. The warm gushiness evaporated, and Grady kept talking.
"Aunt Olivia used to be married to Uncle Slim, and Mom, Dad, Grandma, Grandpa, Aunt Jill, Uncle Fritz, and Uncle Levi aren't her biggest fans. I'm really not allowed to say the word Mom calls her. Dad, too. And Uncle Levi said if he saw her again, he'd break her neck.
I stared at him.
She has a pinchy face,
Ellie added to the conversation, making her own scrunchy face that stated clearly she felt the same about Aunt Olivia as everyone else did.
She never brings snickerdoodles to the family reunions,
Dylan put in, then sucked back more milk before he musingly went on.
Or anything. She wouldn't think about snickerdoodles. She doesn't care about snickerdoodles. Mom says she only cares about looking good, and that's why she's always getting her nails done,
Brady authoritatively told Dylan.
She has pretty nails,
Ellie told me.
I like her nail polish even though it's almost always red. She should try pink.
Although I was nowhere near processing the information they'd provided me, Grady kept spouting it.
She brings Rex and Joel to the family reunion every year and she stays. And Mom says she stays even though she's not family anymore, just to show off her fancy outfits and be a wet blanket. I can't say what Uncle Levi said she does it because most of the words are bad.
Uncle Levi clearly had a mouth much like his brother. And Brock Lucas had an ex-wife and two sons. A pinchy-faced ex-wife who had a perma-manicure and two sons. This I did not know. This a thing you shared. This I did not know what to do with. To be fair, I had known Brock as Brock for 3 days. Still.
Can I be your flower girl when you marry Uncle Slim?
Ellie asked. Again, my body, lungs, and heart went completely still, and then the latter two started pumping, and when they did this, they did it hard. Damn! Now how did I answer that? I decided on honesty. Right now we're just seeing each other, Ellie, but I'll keep a line open to you if it looks like it's getting serious. I promised, and she giggled. Then she placed her order.
Okay, but I want my dress to be pink.
I'll keep that in mind, I told her, and she grinned at me. She had a milk mustache, too. I grinned back. The door swung open, and people flooded through, starting with Laura and ending with Fern. Brock sandwiched in the middle. He came direct to me, eyes on my face, and my eyes slid away. Fern went direct to the table to gather glasses. Laura started herding kids.
All right, kiddos, Laura started, snatching a towel from a rack. Wipe off those milk mustaches and inspect Uncle Slim's living room for your stuff. We're packed up and in the car in 5 minutes. March.
Grady grabbed the towel, swiped his face, tossed it vaguely in his mother's direction, and raced out. Dylan followed suit. Ellie skipped to her mother like she had all the time in the world to tiptoe through the tulips. Rubbed the towel across her face once, mostly smearing milk and not lapping it up. Then she skipped out. So sorry about crashing your date, Tess, Laura said, pushing the towel back on the rack. We were just driving by, saw Slim's truck and bike, and that's unusual, so we took our shot. We'll be out of your hair before you know it. Not a problem, I told her on a smile, feeling Brock leaning into the counter with a hip, the front of his body facing my side. But I kept my eyes glued to his sister at the table. Laura smiled back and stated, I'll have to bring the kids to your bakery. They'll love it. I've been in a couple times, but never with the kids, just to pick things up. Ellie talks about your pink cupcakes all the time. Give me a warning call and I'll batten down the hatches, I quipped, and her smile got bigger as Brock's body got closer. When I say this, I mean his arms circled my ribcage. He turned me so that now I was leaning one hip against the counter, and the rest of me was pressed back against him. Laura's eyes dropped to his arm. They warmed, and she looked back at my face and was grinning like a madwoman again. At this point, Fern dampened the mood by proclaiming, Slim, I hope that doesn't happen often. I turned my head to see her at the sink. She had rinsed the glasses and loaded a rickety dishwasher that might, though I wasn't certain, have been the first of its kind, and she was currently shutting its door. Mom, we'll talk about it later, Brock said in a warning tone. She turned and tipped her head back to look at her son. Does it happen often?
Did I say we'll talk about it later? Brock asked.
Simple question, Slim, she returned, and he sighed. If you mean does he stop by, not often, but he does it. If you mean does he ask for money, no, not anymore, he answered.
Not anymore? Fern prompted, and Brock sighed again.
He saw my truck and bike just like you, Mom, he said quietly. He's an old guy with not a lot of friends left that he hasn't fucked over. He comes by, we sit around, drink beer, and watch a game. This does not happen often, but it happens.
She stared at him. Then she stated, I remember a time when you wouldn't even look at him.
Yeah, well, I've grown up. He's my father. I don't like that he's lonely. What can I say?
Brock replied. Fern studied her son before her eyes shifted to me. She seemed to realize this was not the time or place, and that was when she sighed. Then she said, I'm sorry, Tess. You must think we're all nuts.
My parents are divorced, Fern, and my mom hated my dad from when I was 9 to the day he died. And even then she announced she wanted to go to his funeral so she could spit on his grave. Luckily, the next day, she got the flu and was bedridden for a week, or she might have done it, I told her. She stared at me. Brock's arm got tight around my ribs, and I finished,
I guess what I'm saying is I get it.
Her eyes warmed, her mouth got soft, and she nodded. Then she whispered, thanks, sweetheart.
Mom, Dylan's pulling my jersey, Grady shouted from the living room.
Cue exit, Laura muttered, and I looked at her. See you later, Tess.
Yeah, Laura, nice to meet you.
You too, she replied, then rushed out. Brock pushed me gently in front of him, slid out from behind me, and went to his mother, bending low for her to kiss his cheek.
Have fun, honey. I heard her whisper.
Right, he murmured, and she moved away from him and her eyes came to me.
Have a nice night, Tess. Lovely to meet you.
You too, Fern, I replied. She made to move out. Brock caught my hand and followed her, pulling me behind him. We hit the living room and got separated as the kids shouted goodbyes to me, went into attack mode in order to give Brock's legs hugs. This he allowed from his nephews, but he swung his niece up in his arms, gave her a fierce hug while he kissed, then blew into her neck, through which she giggled with childish abandon, and while observing this, I fought a tidal wave of warm gushiness. A brief period of pandemonium ensued for what appeared to be no reason at all. Then I stood in the middle of Brock's shabby living room as he closed the door. He locked the three locks, knob, deadbolt, chain, and turned to me.
Your mom wanted to spit on your dad's grave? He asked, eyebrows up.
In the bitter divorce department, although your folks clearly have a solid contender, my folks beat anyone by a mile. He grinned at me. I tipped my head to the side and asked, So, Rex and Joel? His grin spread to a smile, then he moved, and before I knew it, in fact, even after it happened, I wasn't sure how I got flat on my back on the couch with Brock on top of me. All I knew was that I was there. Rex and Joel, he stated, his eyes holding mine, his holding mirth, his hands moving on me in ways not conducive to relaxing or having a life-sharing chat. My boys, I was married to their mother for 5 of the most miserable years of my life. Then I was divorced from her, and she made the next 5 years the second most miserable years of my life. 2 years ago, she got remarried, and now she's making her new husband's life miserable, and lucky for me, she's not able to multitask. Rex is 10, Joel is 12. They're good kids. I get them every other weekend, 2 weeks in the summer, and whenever Olivia's at the spa, which, considering her new victim is loaded, is often. This works for me because I think the world of my boys, and clearly my genes are dominant because they aren't pains in the ass like their mother is.
I'm reading from that, you two did not have an amicable divorce and remain friends. I noted, and the mirth in his eyes hit the room and also hit his body, which shook over mine with suppressed laughter.
Yeah, babe, sorry I didn't make that more clear.
So, being with her was the 5 most miserable years of your life?
Yeah, and she made being without her miserable too, but being without her was not the miserable part.
So why did you marry her?
His head tipped slightly to the side, and his face got slightly more serious. Then he answered, Because there was the Olivia I met, dated, fell in love with,
and asked to marry me. Then there was the Olivia who I went on my honeymoon with. Night and day, dark and light. Kid you not, sweetness, it was like she wasn't even the same woman. It was whacked. I stared at him, shocked and intrigued by this story.
Really?
I asked.
Really?
He answered. That's kind of... I hesitated. Scary.
You're telling me,
he stated with feeling, and I thought about Ada and Vic, and how Ada showed Vic everything he wanted to see. Then the minute she got his ring on her finger, Ada showed him Ada, and set about making him the Vic she wanted him to be.
Why do women do that?
I asked.
Seeing as I have a dick, I was hoping you'd answer that question, he replied.
I've no idea, I told him. His mirth came back through his smile and his body shaking on mine. Then he asked,
Are you getting it yet?
Get what? I asked back. His roaming hand stopped and one came to frame the side of my face as he dipped his close. Then he whispered, With Tessa O'Hara, what you see is what you get. No bullshit, no games, no masks, no lies, no nothing, just her, all of her. I'm 45 years old, and baby, I gotta tell you, I'm so sick of that shit you wouldn't believe it. Meeting a woman who doesn't have a clue how to even initiate a play was fucking refreshing.
Oh my.
At that point, for some totally unhinged reason, my mouth blurted,
Ellie has ordered a pink flower girl dress.
Brock stared at me. Then he burst out laughing and shoved his face in my neck to do it. While still doing it, he rolled to his back so I was on top, and I lifted my head to watch as the laughter died to chuckles and his hands came up to gather my hair at the back of my head. When he controlled his hilarity, his warm quicksilver eyes locked on mine, and he said quietly, There it is, my sweet Tess doesn't have a clue how to initiate a play. No bullshit, no games, no masks, no lies.
Brock, I whispered.
Thanks for dealing with the kids so I could deal with Mom and Dad.
You're welcome, I murmured, and he pulled my face to his for a lip touch, then moved it back an inch, whereupon I informed him.
Just a heads up, Grady hears stuff. So much of it, he might go out of his way to listen, and he doesn't forget much.
Brock pulled in a breath before he shared openly. We got dissension. Laura and my older sister Jill want my dad back in the fold. My younger brother Levi, Laura's husband Austin, Jill's partner Fritz, and obviously my mom disagree. Austin, because he's overprotective of Laura, he met her 2 years after she was raped. She was still raw, but he liked what he saw, put on the kid gloves, and hasn't taken them off. He's a good man, a family man, and he loves her. He doesn't like the history, and he didn't like it when my dad came around and asked for money. Fritz, because Fritz likes his money, and that's because he works his ass off for it, and anyone coming around and asking him to give it away isn't real popular. Levi, because my brother hasn't worked shit through. He's got a short fuse, carries a mean grudge, and takes loyalty to extremes. Shit's coming to a head, there's a lot of talk. Grady's a smart kid. He feels deep. He loves his mom, and he's gonna hear and be confused. He paused, then said, I'll have a word with Laura.
Why is this happening? I asked.
I mean, you're all adults. Can't those who want your dad in their fold do it, and those who don't?
Brock cut me off with, Dad's got cancer, Tess.
My body stilled on top of his, and I whispered, Oh my God.
Yeah, he whispered back. This is the second time it's come back. First time he beat it easy. This time, they say it's more aggressive. He wants to make amends, wants his family back, wants peace in case he passes. There are those in our ranks who question his motives and timing. There are those who see our dad is getting old, he's sick. He's not only fucked us over, but also a lot of other people, so he's lonely. And he's a social guy. But even if he wasn't, lonely isn't good when you're sick. So we got dissension. It's bringing up shit that's been buried a while, and emotions are high.
I slid my hand up to curl my fingers around his neck as I whispered, I'm so sorry, honey.
I am too. This shit sucks.
Yeah, it does, I agreed, still whispering, and I saw his eyes intense on me. Then he asked quietly, How'd your dad pass?
Hepatitis C, I answered.
No one knows how he got it, but he was an EMT when he was younger, so maybe something happened on a call. He had it for ages before they caught it. He was close to dying when he got a donor liver, but it attacked the new one, and still, he lived 12 years after that before it beat him.
And your mom hated him because...
Mom hated him because he fell in love with his partner in his ambulance, and they got married 2 weeks after the divorce was final. She was humiliated, and I get that. But he also genuinely loved Donna. I mean, truly. He adored her. And it just sucked that he found her after he found Mom. Mom isn't a bitch or a crazy person. She just wasn't his other half. And Donna was. He felt guilty all his life and made that clear, but she never let it go. She isn't like that with anyone else. But unfortunately for her, Dad was her other half. And she genuinely loved him, so her heart just broke and never mended.
Makes you wonder why we do this shit, he muttered, and I had to admit there were a lot of times I agreed. Though the 4 months with him and the last 3 days, I didn't.
Why does your brother want to break your ex-wife's neck? I asked, and he shook his head but smiled.
Because he loves me and she made me miserable for 10 years. The four of us kids were close growing up, and sometimes, honest to God, Tess, sometimes I could swear the only things Levi wants in life are to see Jill, Laura, and me happy. He's not married, never has been, has dedicated his life to his career, his summer softball league, his season tickets to the Broncos, getting laid as often as he can, and his family. He's the one we all call to babysit. He's the emergency contact at all the kids' schools. He never fails to prop his latest piece in a chair at the dining room table at Mom's house for Thanksgiving dinner. And he runs his ass ragged to get to every house on Christmas.
I don't know if that sounds nice or a little crazy, I shared cautiously.
You and me both, babe. I get his struggle. There were times I wondered if I'd grow up to be Dad. Let a good woman down and fuck over my family. Because none of us know why the fuck he did all the shit he did. As a man, you watch the man whose seed made you, and you think that shit's in you. And again, you also gotta live your life, and if that beast lives within, you gotta have the balls at least to try and tame it.
He pulled my face slightly closer to his, and his silvery eyes grew intense as he continued.
But the beast doesn't live within. This is not to say that I didn't think of stepping out on Olivia, who was a pain in my ass. But I didn't have it in me, and when it got so miserable I couldn't take it anymore, and I had the choice of eating shit my whole life and teaching my sons eating shit was the right thing to do, which it isn't. Or getting out from under that mess and showing them it was important to be a man and find my own happiness. I made that choice for me and for them. Levi doesn't get that life will always be fucked one way or another, and you can't run away from it. He's living a life that's been over for years. We aren't living with Mom and doing our homework at the kitchen table. That family's changed, and that life is gone, and he needs to make his own life and his own family.
Have you told him this?
Getting my brother to listen is like convincing him to let it go about Olivia or Dad.
It is just not gonna happen. My sister lives in Australia, and my mother lives in Florida, I told him. He grinned and let my hair go as his arms wrapped around me.
Finally, two things that show my Tess can be lucky.
My body relaxed into his, and I shared, I miss them every day. His eyes moved over my face as he murmured,
yeah.
Thanksgiving suck. I either go to Florida, where it's just Mom and me, and that's okay, but that isn't like having a full table with kids being loud and wondering what girl your philandering brother is going to bring to dinner. Or she's in Australia, and I have to find a friend close to mooch dinner from. Those are worse. The skin around his eyes went soft, and he muttered, my poor Tess. I moved my face a half an inch closer, and my fingers tensed into his neck for a second before I said quietly, I guess what I'm saying is, all this seems like it sucks, but it doesn't. It's all based in love and history and loyalty. So really, it's kind of beautiful because the alternative would be not having any of that. And then where would you be? Brock didn't answer. No. Instead, his eyes looked into mine for long moments before his hand slid up in my hair. His body rolled me so I was again on my back. He was again on me. And his mouth had captured mine. And he was delivering a hard, deep, wet kiss that took my breath away. When he lifted his head, I fought for my breath as well as control of several areas of my body. And he asked, you hungry, babe? Yes, I breathed because that was the truth. I was. But I was happy to eat later, as in lunch the next day. Brock grinned, and the sight of it with his handsome face close, his hard body pressed the length of mine, and my lips and other places besides, still tingling from his kiss, I again lost control of those several areas of my body. Therefore, to move my mind from him and what he was doing to those places, I blurted, "I think I've got popsicle juice on my back. I'll pay for the dry cleaning." "That's okay, I kick ass with hand wash." He grinned again. Then he asked, "Snickerdoodles?" From the look in his eyes, I knew that he knew I'd marked they were his favorites. Therefore, I shrugged and said, "The first time I made them, you ate like 7, and you gravitate to cinnamon. It doesn't take a mind reader to figure out you like them." He shook his head, still grinning, but now muttering, "No games, no lies, no bullshit." What could I say? This was true. So I didn't say anything. He did, and this was a murmured, "Let's get you fed." He knifed off me, grabbed my hand, pulled me off the couch and into the kitchen. Then he fed me. Then he ate 3 snickerdoodles. Then he took me to bed. "Oh, God. Oh, my God." "Fuck, Tess," Brock growled, and not able to hold myself up anymore, I fell forward into a hand in the bed beside him as I kept riding him hard, grinding down to take him deep, his fingers on one hand clamped encouragingly around my hip, as his thumb on the other continued to press and roll against my clit. My dazed eyes focused on him as the sensations between my legs trembled down the tops of my thighs, warmed my belly, glided up to swell my breasts, making the silk covering them beautiful torture at my nipples, and up farther so even my scalp tingled. I ground down on his cock, rolling my hips as my free hand went to his face, sliding my hand down his throat, then farther to explore the sleek, solid wall of his chest. I held his heated, mercury eyes and whispered, "God, honey, you're so fucking beautiful." At my words, he bucked his hips so forcefully, I nearly went flying. His torso knifed up, his arm clamped around me, and he whipped me to my back. His hips driving into mine, his thumb still at my clit, he captured my mouth in a searing hot kiss and didn't let go, even as I whimpered the warning of my fast approaching orgasm into his mouth. And he still didn't let go as one of my arms convulsed around his back. The other hand drove into his hair and fisted. My feet planted themselves in his bed. My hips surged up, and I exploded with a sharp cry against his tongue. Still coming, Brock's thumb disappeared, and both his hands yanked my legs up and around his hips. He gave me his weight, then both hands went to my ass, and he jerked my hips up, deepening his pounding thrusts. His mouth finally released mine in order for his to grunt. Each noise he made throbbed into the walls of my sex, and the subsiding wave built, and to my shock, started crashing in again. Brock. His name came from somewhere deep, breathy with surprise and low with pleasure as the second orgasm rolled over me. My nails dragged his back, and my neck started to arch, but one of his hands left my hip and slid into my hair, fingers fisting and holding my head steady so he could watch. The wave receded again just as his thrusts lost their rhythm, but increased their violence then, still driving deep. I watched his head tilt back and listened to his release. When it stopped being vocal and his thrusts regained a rhythm, this one slower and starting to gentle, I lifted my head and pressed my lips against his throat. He let me do this, but when my head dropped back to the bed, his face moved to my neck, and still gliding slowly in and out, his hands started to roam over the silk at my sides. I held him tight in 3 limbs, my hand in his thick hair sliding through repeatedly as both our heart rates slowed, our breath evened, and finally he stopped stroking and stayed planted inside me. Against my skin with a gentle tug on the material at one side, he asked, "To sleep, you gotta change out of this into a normal nightie?" I laughed softly and stopped stroking his hair to wind my arm around his shoulders. After dinner and snickerdoodles, he took me to his bedroom, where we fooled around on his bed until we were fooling around partially unclothed. Then we were seriously fooling around because we were totally naked. He took his time, I took mine, and only at the end, when it was skin against skin and breathing was so labored, there were no whispered words, that it got wild and energetic. This, of course, totally blew out of the water the plan I came up with while kickboxing. Undeterred, after we were done, when I hit his bathroom to take out my contacts and prepare for bed, I slid on the short, deep lavender nightie with slits up the sides, thick edges of delicate black lace, and a pair of black lace panties, all of which cost a fortune because it was pure silk and the lace was extraordinary. In glasses and wearing what I thought was an in-joke, I walked into Brock's bedroom only to find Brock didn't think my nightie was funny. I knew this when his eyes hit me. His whole face got dark. The air in the room became so sweltering, it felt like it was pressing against my skin. And the minute I got close to the bed, he moved, lunging toward me. His arm hooked me at the waist, and he yanked me into the bed, pulled off my glasses, tossed them unheeded on the nightstand, and we started up again. This time, from start to finish, it was wild and energetic. No pleasant exploration, no lazy caresses. It was hot, heavy, and completely abandoned. I answered his question with, "Actually, it's kind of comfy." His head came up, and he looked down at me. "Good, 'cause I like it." I grinned at him and whispered, "I kinda got that." He grinned back, and his head descended so his mouth could touch mine. Then it slid down my cheek to work at my neck, slow, lazy, and sweet. His hips moved slightly as he pulled out gently, and I drew in a soft breath at the feel of it, and the fact I didn't like the loss of him. My arms gave him a squeeze as my head turned. In his ear, I whispered, "I have to go get cleaned up." His head came up, his sated eyes caught mine, and he whispered back, "All right, baby." His face dipped to my throat, his lips touched me there, and he rolled off. I rolled the other way, got off the bed, snatched up my panties, and headed to his bathroom. The good news was, his bathroom was clean, though he could use new towels since he clearly bought his in the same year he bought his pickup and his furniture. Not to mention the bathroom had been installed before the Brady Bunch was in reruns. Still, it wasn't icky, which was what I decided to focus on. I did my thing, slid on my panties, and bent over the basin to look at myself in the mirror. Hair wild, face flushed, lips swollen, nipples still hard against the silk. I stared, and for the first time in my entire life, taking in my reflection, I thought I might be a little bit of all right. Then I grinned, turned out the light, and walked back into the bedroom. Brock was leaning across the bed and turning off the light at my side. As I joined him, he was faced the other way and turning off the light at his. When he was done, he reached out to me, gathered me in his arms, pulled my front close to his, tangled his long legs with mine, and his arm slanted up my back so his hand was in my hair. Pulled me deeper as he pushed my face against his chest. I turned it so I was resting my cheek there and slid an arm around his waist. "Thanks for dinner," I whispered against his chest. "Best part about it was dessert," he whispered back, and I smiled. Then I sighed. Then I told him, "I like your family." His fingers tensed against my scalp before he murmured, "Good." It was then, keeping it real, which was the only way I knew how to do it, I shared, "Just FYI, and I'll preface this by saying this is not an act of a psycho woman invading your life, but a rescue effort. I'm buying you new towels, and, new dish towels as a priority one mission." His voice held a smile when he asked, "A rescue effort? Someone needs to put yours out of their misery." There was a short, deep chuckle. I not only heard, but also felt before. "Sweetness, I got an ex who cleaned me out 7 years ago, a job that means I'm rarely home, and this includes me being under deep cover on an assignment that lasted a year and a half. A year of that where I had zero contact with family, even my kids. And I got two boys who are at an age they don't give a shit about anything but the fact that TV works and food is in the fridge. Considering they're boys, they'll probably never be at an age where they give a shit about anything but TV and food. Towels are not a priority, and dish towels are definitely not a priority. My head tipped back to look at his shadowed jaw in the dark room. You didn't see your kids or family for a year? His head tipped down, and I felt his eyes on my face. I didn't see it taking that long, but it did, so another bigger reason for my Statue of Liberty play with Darla. Oh, I whispered, thinking that now definitely made sense, and it made sense before. It was just that now it made more sense. Then I asked, does that happen often? I'd had to take undercover work before, not often, but it happened, and it was another reason Olivia made my life a misery. This, I had to admit, made sense, too. She didn't like your job? Olivia likes attention, and if she doesn't get it, she wants other shit to make up for it. And that other shit costs money, lots of it, far more than I made. She also isn't real big on being a mom, so bearing the brunt of raising two sons was not her favorite pastime. And she regards it as a pastime, no joke. So, she wasn't doing cartwheels that she didn't have a man dance in attendance on her, and she didn't have what she felt was restitution for being denied that. Oh, man, this didn't sound good, any of it. But especially the part about Olivia not big on being a mom. But what you do is important, I stated. Yeah, he agreed. And dangerous, I added. And his arm gave me a squeeze. Yeah, he repeated. I tipped my head down and pressed my cheek against his chest, processing the fact that he had a job that meant he might disappear. I was also wondering if I'd be like Olivia. Not too happy about that, acting out when it happened and thinking uncomfortably, since I knew from experience I'd miss him if he was gone. I might. Lisa's up on this place next month, and I'm already looking, he announced into my thoughts, and my head tipped back again. Sorry? Things are hot for me here. Last job before the Heller gig exposed me to some folks I don't want to know where I work, but now they know where I work. This cripples what I do for the DEA, which means desk work, which means, since I'm a field man and desk work would be like certain death, I put in for a job with the DPD. I interviewed, got it, and resigned from the DEA 3 weeks ago. I started the DPD in the homicide unit in a week. This means more stability, total exposure. And if some slimeball follows me home, and home happens to be a decent place, they won't ask questions. So I'm looking for a new place. I was blinking and processing this new information, but having difficulty with it. Therefore, the only word I could force out was, really? His voice again held a smile when he replied, really. Which means, after years of living with one foot in the underbelly of Denver, I step out of that into a stable day-to-day with that underbelly leaking in a controlled way, not being what I breathe 24/7. My woman hightailing her ass to Kentucky would not be good. I'm currently reconsidering my plans to hightail my ass to Kentucky, I informed him, and received an arm squeeze and a chuckle. Then he capped it with his lips touching my forehead before he settled back into the pillows. Then he said, tomorrow, before putting my towels out of their misery, job one for you is calling your real estate agent and getting that fucking sign out of your front yard. Okay, I agreed instantly, got another arm squeeze and chuckle, but alas, no kiss on the forehead. I pressed my cheek to his chest again, thinking stupidly but hopefully and oh so pleasantly that Ellie would look cute in a pink flower girl dress. Sweetness, he called into my replete gathering drowsiness. His hand slid from my head down my neck and farther down the silk at my spine. You got any more nighties like this? No, and I have to sell 150 cupcakes to afford another one. Jesus, he muttered. It was worth it, I muttered back. Damn straight, he agreed, still muttering. I let out a soft giggle. His hand kept sliding down, rounded my waist, and settled curled around my hip against the bed, so he was holding me tucked super close to his warm, hard body. Then he murmured, "Sleep, baby." "All right, honey. Night."
"Night, Tess."
I drew in a breath and let it go. Then I pressed my cheek deep and held tight to Brock. My body relaxed, and I fell asleep. Chapter 10. You baked a cake? 1 month later.
Aren't we just gonna eat that?
Joel asked, and I looked from piping a border of cream cheese frosting on the cinnamon carrot cake I was decorating to him and his brother sitting at their dad's bar. Update: the last month had been busy. First, Brock had made two moves. The first was from his job at the DEA to his job at the DPD. The second was from his shabby, somewhat scary, definitely taking your life in your hands to ascend the outside staircase apartment to a very not shabby, not at all scary, having no outside staircase rented condo. It was in a small, well-landscaped, quiet, L-shaped layout of condos. The only drawback was he had two parking spaces, and the entire complex of 12 units had only three visitor spots, which were around the bend of the L from Brock's place. So, if his family were around, which was somewhat often, considering he was available, they were close-knit, and still in the throes of emotional turmoil. Parking could become a problem. The rest of it was awesome. A fenced-in front patio that was a sun trap, and thus, if the sun was shining, as it had a tendency to do a lot in Denver, the minute you opened the wooden gate, you entered warmth, even though it was November. Inside the front door was a big living room with fireplace and two-story slanted ceiling. Up a shortish flight of stairs to the right was a humongous master bedroom with bath. In that was a new king-sized bed with new sheets and comforter. The bed Brock bought. The sheets and comforter I picked out, not with Brock, who flatly refused to go shopping for sheets, and bought the first bed he laid eyes on, which luckily was a nice one. But instead, I went with Elvira, Gwen, and Martha, the former two throwing themselves into this errand with scary abandon, and the latter doing it under obvious protest. For she still was waiting for Brock to expose the dickhead within. In his condo next to the up flight was a down flight that led to a door that took you down to a full basement with laundry. The lower level above the basement had two smaller rooms separated by a full bath. Beyond the up and down staircase was another short staircase. This only five steps that led to an elevated kitchen that had a railing facing the living room, a small dining area, and a bar that separated a somewhat compact but modern and relatively luxurious, for a rental, kitchen. As threatened, I had bought Brock new towels and dish towels, and when he moved, I added more sets for the boys' bathroom. As I would learn, considering they were more meddling, nosy, and intrusive than even Elvira, without his knowledge and using the key he'd given his mother, Fern, Laura and Brock's other sister, Jill, commandeered his ratty-assed furniture and delivered it to places unknown that were so covert, even a DEA agent couldn't track them down, and he tried. They then filled the space with a large, fantastic, masculine, comfortable, sectional, new square coffee table, a handsome upright chest that held his flat-screen TV, stereo, DVD player, PS3 for the boys, and DVDs, shelves that held CDs and books, and a new dining room set. Oh, and three new standing lamps and coasters for the living room, as well as placemats and an unusual but appealing wrought iron fat candle holder, with candles scented in ocean, to sit on his dining room table. Unfortunately, they were not finished illicitly rearranging Brock's new decor, and even more unfortunately, I was with him when he walked into his new space. He took one look at it, and the air in the room went abrasive, as he lost his ever-loving mind. Also, unfortunately, all members of the Lucas family shared the trait of their mood invading the room. These three women had attitude. Knew Brock since his life began, except Laura, who was 5 years younger than him, were not afraid of him, and gave back as good as they got. Thus began a shouting match that was loud, long,
Surprising, intriguing, but also a little scary. I could see that Brock was a man, all man, and his space was his space, his shit was his shit, and he did not appreciate the intrusion, and that intrusion signifying a trio of women taking care of a 45-year-old man. And that was all I could see, because even though I kept my mouth shut and hung in the kitchen while they shouted it out, though his new furniture was awesome, I agreed with Brock that they were out of line. This went on for a while, and when I say that, I mean a long while. I had the sense they did this not because of new furniture and unwelcome intrusions, but more deep-seated issues all of them were dancing around. It got to the point where I feared things that could not be unsaid would be said. Therefore, I was going to have to step outside my status of new girlfriend, and thus person who really shouldn't get involved, and wade in when Fern pulled out the big and arguably emotionally manipulative guns, as it was my experience that mothers on the whole were wont to do.
"If we all haven't learned something with what's happening with Cobb Slim, then we're in trouble," she shouted.
I watched with some despair as Brock's torso jerked like he'd been struck, and the stony look he had frozen on his face as Fern went on.
"Life is too darn short, too darn short. I'm a year younger than your father, and it is not lost on me that I'm next. So, I've decided that my kids are going to enjoy me and what I can give them while I can watch. Jill and Laura kicked in a little, but most of this is from me. This means you won't get a big inheritance, but you weren't going to get that anyway. It also means I can see my grandsons lazing around on nice furniture in a decent place. And I know you don't think that's important, but I do. That's what I want, and that's what I'm going to have." She stopped speaking, and when no one broke the silence, she continued, but did it quieter. However, the words she delivered next packed an even bigger punch. "My girl endured a nightmare," she said. My body got tense. Brock's eyes sliced to his sister, to me, then back to his mother when she kept speaking. "I know you pulled in every favor owed to you, and I know you ended up owing more to make sure that man paid for what he did to my girl. I saw what that did to her, and I saw it eat at you, you and my other babies. But you were the only one in the position to do something about it, and you didn't rest until that was done for her. I watched my son exhaust himself to make it so his sister could have some peace after that nightmare. And if Laura and I want to say thank you for it, then Slim, you're damn well going to let us say thank you and keep your mouth shut about it." These words, regrettably, had as profound an effect on me, learning this about Brock, as they had on the familial combatants in the living room. I tried to pull myself together, promptly failed, began to lose it, and found my feet rushing out of the kitchen, down the short flight of stairs with my mouth mumbling a trembling, "Excuse me," as I raced to the other flight, up into and through Brock's bedroom to his bathroom where I closed the door. I pressed my back against the wall, slid down, shoved my face in my knees, and burst into tears. I would learn later that Brock had not shared my ordeal with his family. And considering my dramatic reaction, even though Brock was in that bathroom with me about a nanosecond after my ass hit the floor, his mom and sisters were so worried, they didn't leave until after Brock calmed me down and left me curled on his bed while he went down to explain and get them gone. Luckily, thus ended the fight. Though Brock didn't give up, he just quit shouting about it. However, when he couldn't find his furniture, he gave up and gave in. Weirdly, or maybe not, this elevated my new girlfriend status, seeing as they'd found out I hadn't been with Brock for a few weeks like they thought, but instead quite a bit longer. They sensed there was seriousness to our relationship. I shared a tragic circumstance the like of which had been visited on their family, which clearly moved them. And although I couldn't explain how they did it, or all the reasons why, I knew I'd been welcomed wholeheartedly into the family fold.
Brock, seeing as he missed little or possibly nothing, couldn't have missed this, and he had no reaction to it whatsoever except for settling naturally and casually into it. It was safe to say I really liked Brock, but I'd also spent a number of years huddling in my own space as a defense mechanism, and a big, loud, interfering family kind of freaked me out. I kept this to myself, thinking that if Brock and I survived for the long haul, I'd get used to it, mainly because I wouldn't have a choice. The other big thing that happened was I met Rex and Joel. In fact, the Friday after Brock and I got back together heralded his next weekend with them. He picked them up from school, and 3 hours later, I met them at Bojo's for pizza. Brock was not wrong. His genes were dominant. I didn't know what Olivia looked like, but both her boys looked like miniature Brocks. Joel had Fern's blue eyes. Rex had someone else's nose, but other than that, features, body shape, everything was so like Brock, it was uncanny. It was different, unique to them, but still somehow the same. And he was also not wrong about something else. They were good kids, polite, soft-spoken, attentive, well-behaved. Maybe too much for kids their age, considering they weren't much older than Grady, and they had none of the exuberant little kidness of their cousins. I saw Brock every night, and therefore every morning. But when Brock had his boys, these were the only times he and I spent blocks of time being apart. He explained this to me as being an attempt to introduce me slowly into their lives, rather than shove me in their faces and force them to spend time with someone they didn't know too well. So, after our first Friday night dinner together, I didn't see Brock until Sunday night, and the next time Brock had them, I saw them again on Friday night, and then didn't see Brock until Sunday. But it was the next time I would get it about his boy's good behavior. Because we didn't meet for Bojo's for pizza, I brought cupcakes and Brock cooked spaghetti at his old pad, where we were going to eat dinner and watch a movie. But I was at his place when they got there in late afternoon and didn't leave until they were in their twin beds in Brock's second bedroom. Spending more time with them, I noted on arrival they seemed wound up. And when I say this, I mean tight, jumpy, hyperattentive, anxious. And Rex once actually looked fearful, and this was when he spilled his glass of pop on the coffee table. His wide, terrified eyes shot to his father. His face paled right under my gaze, and his body grew visibly solid. I also saw this make Brock's mouth get tight, not because of the spill, but because of his son's reaction to doing it. He quickly hid his reaction, and cautiously and gently dealt with the spill while assuring his son, who with effort allowed himself to be assured, but clearly didn't commit to it, that it was in no way a big deal. It didn't take a child psychologist to see if Rex spilled pop at his mom's, the reaction he got from his dad was not even close to what he'd get at his mother's. I had never been with a man with children, and had decided to bide my time and let Brock discuss it with me when and if he wanted. This was not a game. This was me giving my man space. We were still getting to know each other, and he didn't need me nosing into his business with his boys and his ex. So I didn't. But this weekend, Brock decided would be different. He talked to me about it, asked me if I was comfortable with it. I wasn't exactly, and told him so, but also told him I'd give it a shot. So Friday night was his with his boys, so was Saturday. But Saturday night, I came over and made, at Brock's request, since he wolfed down 3/4 of it when I made it for him, my Mexican tortilla casserole, though obviously since Brock liked it so much, I doubled it. This was followed by hot fudge sundaes with my homemade hot fudge sauce. After, I spent the night. It was a compliment when the boys dug into my food with the same relish as their father. And it was a relief when they took my spending the night in stride. Now it was Sunday. The kids were being picked up by their mother at 5, and Brock told me that Olivia had long since informed him she wanted the kids returned to her fed and watered, so we were going to have a big late lunch, after which I was serving homemade carrot cake.
A cake I was decorating at that present moment, even though it was just for us. This was something I had to do. It was a compulsion. Every cake deserved to be pretty, even if the decoration was simple. And considering the thousands of baked goods I decorated, it took me the same amount of time to decorate a cake as it did for most people simply to frost them, so it really didn't matter. So I smiled into Joel's blue eyes and answered his question with, "Yeah." He looked at his brother. Rex looked at him. Then they looked back at me. Then Rex asked, "Do you do cakes like the cake boss?" I shook my head and went back to piping while explaining, "My shop is small. I only have two girls who help me with the baking and decorating. I'm not set up for that kind of operation, and my cake mission doesn't include extravagance. Just the drive to make every cake I bake pretty."
"Cakes don't need to be pretty. They just need to taste good," Joel informed me as his dad moved up the steps.
My eyes went from Brock to his son, whereupon I shared, "In order to decorate a cake, you have to make more frosting, which means the cake has more frosting, which means the eater gets to eat more frosting. So agreed, cakes need to taste good, but decorated cakes being decorated with loads of extra frosting taste even better." Brock circled Joel's chest with an arm, tugged him playful rough back into his torso, and muttered, "Can't argue with that, Joey."
"Nope,"
Joel agreed, his eyes on the cake. And looking into their hungry depths, I knew my work was done, as clearly his horizons had been expanded. At that point, there came a knock on the door. I looked to Brock, saw his brows draw together, and his head turn in that direction. Then he let his son go and sauntered away. I went back to piping.
"Carrot cake's my favorite,"
Rex shared, his voice not hiding his anticipation, and the sound of it made me grin. I knew this. It was his father's favorite, too. This was why a homemade one was sitting on the counter. "Good," I muttered.
"What the fuck?"
I heard Brock growl. My head went up, and both boys' necks twisted to look toward the door.
"Nice,"
I heard a woman say, then go on.
"I've got to get the boys early. Can you get their stuff together? I'll be waiting in the car."
"Come again?" Brock asked.
"I have to get the boys early," she repeated. "I'll be waiting in the car. Tell them to hurry."
"Olivia, you don't get them until 5, Brock stated. Already tense at the knowledge my mind was refusing to believe that Brock's ex was at the door, sounding like the bitch I suspected she was from what I learned from Brock and Fern.